This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, October 3rd, 2013. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, a very one-sided conversation. In 1991, Matt Rasmussen's brother shot himself to death. And this is the event Rasmussen explores in his first book of poems, Black Aperture, which came out earlier this year. Kathleen Rooney is a poet and essayist who's written about Black Aperture in a piece up on our website, poetryfoundation.org. She joins me by phone from Chicago. Kathleen, as you say in your piece, you were in a writing workshop with Matt Rasmussen more than 10 years ago when the first poem of Black Aperture was written. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it was a poetry workshop with the poet Bill Knott. And Bill kind of had the deserved reputation of being pretty blunt, but in a good way that was always in service to the poem. And Matt had been turning in these sort of vague, non-first person, kind of nature-y Minnesota poems. And finally, after just a series of these, Bill kind of burst out and asked him why he was writing these and why he didn't try writing something with more personal investment. And so after that, Matt, you know, went home that night and wrote what ended up being the first poem from the book that would eventually, like a decade later, become Black Aperture.
And that poem is called After Suicide. Let's hear it, and then we'll talk about how the class reacted to it and the poem itself. Here's Matt Rasmussen reading After Suicide.
A hole is nothing but what remains around it. My brother stood in the refrigerator light, drinking milk that poured out of his head, through thick black curls, down his back, into a puddle growing larger around him. One foot on worn carpet, one on cold linoleum. He couldn't hear his name clouding from my mouth, settling in the fluorescent air. I wanted to put my finger into the hole, feel the smooth channel he escaped through, stop the milk so he could swallow it. But my body held as if driven into place. The milk on the floor reflected the light, then became it, floated upward and outward, filling every shadow, blowing the dark open.
Now that is a poem with a lot of personal investment in it. So do you remember how the workshop reacted when he brought that poem in?
I do, and what's interesting that the reader of Black Aperture wouldn't necessarily have the ability to know is that originally the title of the poem was Dream After Suicide, and so the poem had been kind of overtly framed as a dream. There was some discussion in the workshop of why do you need to make it a dream? Do you need that extra layer of mediation? Does it hold the event too much at a distance? And I'm happy to see in the final iteration in the book that he has chosen to get rid of that frame, because I think the poem is beautiful and it has all that dreamlike, you know, nightmarish, really, surreality without having to be, you know, holding the reader's hand to that extent.
My brother stood in the refrigerator light, drinking milk that poured out of his head, through thick black curls, down his back, into a puddle growing larger around him.
That was one of the things that I remember the workshop really, really liking, is this weird replacement of what you would expect to be blood with milk, just the way that this substitution of what to most people is a more wholesome image for one that would be more violent and graphic, and the way that weirdly the milk makes the poem, I think, even stranger and sadder and more nightmarish.
The milk on the floor reflected the light, then became it, floated upward and outward, filling every shadow, blowing the dark open.
You know, it's striking that a poem about someone's violent death should end up in a vision of milky light, because we usually think of death as darkness, but here a death is blowing the dark open.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, you know, that I've talked to Matt about, and I know he was trying to do with this book, and I think he succeeds, is to emphasize that because it's a suicide, you know, it's kind of a weird death because it's a chosen death. Even if the person was making that choice under duress, there's a sense of shattering, this idea that the family left behind was shattered by the act, but then also that the very idea of this brother was itself shattered because nobody thought it was going to happen. Nobody thought he was, you know, kind of in quotes, the kind of person who would do something like that.
Yeah. Let's listen to another one. This one is also called After Suicide, although it comes a little later in the book.
After Suicide. In the hallway of life, you were a rose with no stem, and I, the janitor sweeping away the fallen petals. You said, the world revolves while we ourselves remain in the darkness of the never-ending, never-beginning never. I say that the man who was humiliated in the second act and shot himself in the fifth stands up, smiles, bows. The lamp asks, is it the shadow writing this, the pen, or they're converging? The paper asks nothing.
So here we are again with life taking place in the dark. And I'm reading those lines. You said the world revolves while we ourselves remain in the darkness of the never-ending, never-beginning, never. So the people who are left behind are the ones left in the darkness. It's not the person that killed himself who's in the darkness.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that to me goes with that darkness is a sense of silence. I think the poems return not just to repeated images of darkness, but of silence. There's, again, this idea of unspeakability. You know, sometimes when something goes wrong between us and another person, we want to go to that person and talk it out, and the suicide has rendered that completely impossible. And I think one of the things that Matt does, in addition to the darkness themes, is he never says his brother's name anywhere in the book. And I think this poem, especially to me, because it is about, you know, the act of writing, right? The paper asks nothing. To me, it particularly stands out, right? It's conspicuous in its absence, this idea that he never says his brother's name.
I say that the man who was humiliated in the second act and shot himself in the fifth stands up, smiles, bows.
Is this some idea of suicide as a kind of performance?
I think so, and certainly as one staged by the suicide himself. But more than that, I think it's sort of a casting of Matt himself, the writer, as director, as someone who wants to take this event that when it happened, he had no control over, and to redo it, right? This idea of, you know, we know what happened in real life, and that's the person who gets shot is dead, and that's it. But in Matt's version of this play, the person does get to come back, right? Stands up, smiles, bows. And to me, that's a desire to kind of stage manage and control something uncontrollable. And then also what I see in this poem, especially because of the repetition and then throughout the book, you know, even the fact that there's two poems we're looking at today called After Suicide, is kind of that idea of repetition compulsion, that sort of literary Freudian idea of grief, of where, you know, sometimes when something terrible happens, people choose the option of just not talking about it, just not replaying it, trying to shut it away, which I think Matt, you know, did for years, not writing about it. And then once you get to a point in grieving, you can start repeating it. And you see Matt doing that over and over, this repetition compulsion, instead of hiding the event, just looking at it and looking at it and looking at it to the point where, you know, there's an attempt to master it, even if it's impossible.
The ending is really beguiling.
The lamp asks, is it the shadow writing this, the pen? Or they're converging. The paper asks nothing.
The paper asks nothing. What does that say about him and the act of writing about this?
I love this ending and the way I kind of take it, you know, because I was in this workshop with Bill Knott. The idea was, you know, we were asking, you know, his audience and Bill was asking. And I think, you know, people in his life, when they would find out about his brother, would have all these things they want to ask, but maybe feel they couldn't ask. And so I think here I see the act of writing as, I don't want to necessarily say solace because that sounds maybe cheap and neat, but this idea of this open, clear, white space where Matt could go in and not be asked, but could ask himself and thereby kind of create sense out of this seemingly senseless tragedy.
Yeah, the paper's not passing judgment. The paper doesn't have puerile curiosity. The paper is simply there, blank, waiting for his answer.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's hear one more poem, which brings us back to the days before cell phones and voicemail, when we all had answering machines with outgoing messages. This one is called Outgoing.
Our answering machine still played your message. and on the day you died, Dad asked me to replace it. I was chosen to save us the shame of dead you answering calls. Hello, I've just shot myself. To leave a message for me, call hell. The clear cassette lay inside the white machine, like a tiny patient being monitored, or a miniature glass briefcase protecting the scroll of lost voices. Everything barely mattered, and then no longer did. I pressed record and laid my voice over yours, muting it forever and even now. I'm sorry we are not here, I began.
Now this one, it seems to me, is also a poem about writing about this. I pressed record and laid my voice over yours, muting it forever and even now. There seems to be some ambivalence about what he's up to.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say there's so many incredibly good poems in this collection, but Outgoing is probably my favorite. And I think that ambivalence is part of why. This is one of the poems that I kind of single out as being one of the funniest in the collection, which might seem a crazy thing to say.
Well, there's dark humor there. Hello, I have just shot myself to leave a message for me. Call hell. That's dark humor.
And I think that's one of the things that makes this so powerful, because I think what you see there is obviously, you know, Matt passing judgment on his brother's decision to kill himself. But then also, as you're pointing out, I feel like there's some self-critique, partly in those lines, but just in the whole thing about, you know, passing judgment on himself for doing this act of recording over his brother, you know, both literally in the sense of this answering machine, but then more poetically in the sense of even writing this book.
There's a lot packed in here. There's a lot, even the title contributes quite a bit to it. Outgoing, of course, literally meaning the outgoing message, but also outgoing, something going out of the world.
Yeah, and I think as much as there's anger and hostility toward the suicide, I think there's a really beautiful sense of sorrow and regret. This idea at the end, it's the banal cliche of what you say on an answering machine message, right? I'm sorry, we're not here to answer your call. Mm-hmm. But he's saying, I'm sorry, we are not here. And this use of even the pronouns, right? I, singular, alone now that you have killed yourself. I'm sorry that we, you know, all of us, you and I and mom and dad aren't, we can't exist anymore.
Well, thanks, Kathleen.
Thank you very much.
Kathleen Rooney's essay on Matt Rasmussen and Black Aperture is on our website, where you can also read some of her own poems, as well as listen to some previous podcasts she's been in. If you have any comments on this program, email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.